You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 10 March. We've got U.S. inflation expectations later this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunza from Sanlam Private Wealth, Rainbow Results, Exxaro Updates, U.S. jobs data, Andrew Williams from Schroders, Trump and Tech, and is there value in value stocks right now? And then Dylan Govender from Investec Business Banking, trade policies, what should we be watching out for locally? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Discovery has a massive medical scheme problem. Medical inflation and member contributions are only going to get worse. Business Day, shares of PGM miners rally after deep platinum deficit forecast. Global supply of platinum expected to continue falling on lower output from SA mines. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P up 0.6%, NASDAQ 0.75% higher. The East is mostly red, Sydney's down 0.4%, Tokyo's up almost 0.5%, Hong Kong of 2.1%, Tencent down 3.1%. Commodities mostly green, gold futures 2,917, Brent 69.94, platinum is red at 967, palladium 954. Rand is 1834, Bitcoin 82,000. Top 40 opening call, red open 110 points or a tenth of a percent lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, let's start with the US jobs data that came out on Friday. Maybe a little lower than expected, but still a labor market that is growing, an unemployment rate that slipped, but frankly slipped to only 4.1%. I mean, all in all, another good jobs data number out of the US, is fair to say.
Yeah, morning, Simon. Thanks for having me on. Obviously one of the most important data prints for us and for the world to watch these jobless numbers. And at first glance, as you said in your intro, you know, not that bad. 151,000 jobs just in the month of Feb is normally not bad on the face of it. But it was a little bit light than 160,000 that was forecast. And as you said, employment rate ticking up a little bit to 4.1. I think this needs to be taken against the context of a U.S. consumer that's feeling a little bit under pressure. You've also got consumer sentiment down quite a bit. And a lot of the indications recently implying that the U.S. certainly appears to be slowing down. I noticed Mr. Powell at a presser on Friday sort of trying to play it down and saying, you know, the jobs numbers, you know, economy's in good shape, he said, and there was a lot of uncertainty, etc. But overall, I can't help but feeling this is just this gentle rolling over that's been expected of a U.S. market that's been very expensive.
And in many senses, I suppose, I mean, jobs is kind of the canary in the coal mine. I mean, you know, as you say, it was up, but it was down on expectations. We need to keep a close eye, particularly if it carries on slipping.
Yeah, you do. And also, you know, keep an eye on the dollar index as well. You know, this dollar index normally, you know, it's the barometer of a country, as we all know. And sitting at the Dixie was, I think, 109, almost 110 at some point, back down at, you know, under 105. That softer dollar, again, also implying a little bit of, I guess, assets moving away from US, which we've seen. So you're right. Canary in the coal mine, got to keep an eye on it and keep an eye on the dollar index as well.
Yeah, that was a giant move in the dollar index. I think the biggest in 3 years, a weekly move. Rainbow, I mean, giant numbers. Headline earnings up 1,348.8%. I mean, base effect here, obviously. Yeah. I just I mean, chickens. I mean, it's a tough business. It's a deeply cyclical business.
It is a tough business, but I think taken against, you know, this is a recovery play that's happening here. Mm-hmm. And if you drill down into the actual numbers, we're not shareholders on this, but I do think for those who are shareholders, the worst might be certainly out the way. Look, they've got a lot of pressure with disruptions, you know, all the usual suspect, Transnet, logistics, throwing a bit of avian flu. I mean, it's been the perfect storm for Rainbow Chicken. But I do think they're getting better. I think that it looks a little bit better. Their cash flow is starting to become a lot more positive, although they're held back on the dividend, but that's to be expected. Mm-hmm. I think overall, Simon, you know, if they can get a few things right, and they said they're engaging with government, which has been very, very positive, and they can maybe try stem some of the chickens coming in from outside the country. I actually think it looks okay. I think the worst is there. It was a bit weaker on the day, but I think the management needs to be commended for a business that they are turning around against all sorts of headwinds, really.
Yeah, I take a point in that. And EBITDA doubled, EBITDA margins to 7.4. And maybe we get the poultry zero rating in Wednesday's budget. Quick last question. Exxaro, I mean, no surprises. We saw it with Thungela. We get this. Revenue's higher, but so are costs. And some of those costs are transport. Of course, some of it is commodity prices. HEPS expected to be lower. This is a tough space.
It is a tough space, and it's even tougher if you sort of a one-trick sort of business. They are completely reliant on that spot price of thermal coal. I mean, thermal coal markets are back sort of almost pre-pandemic levels. You saw it with Glencore, Gary Nagle also talking about Thermaltake giving them a bit of a knock as well. Unfortunately, Exxaro, this is the majority of their business, and it's huge, huge cost pressures there. Also throwing in the fact there's been a little bit of a soap opera in the C-suite, that hopefully they get that right as well. I mean, sitting, around about, where is it, 150 odd rand a share, off, well off the highs a couple of years ago of over 200. Again, this might be a little bit of a recovery share, but they've got a lot of pressure. We need those thermal coal prices to tick up. And again, also logistics, same old problems. Richards Bay, a few things they need to get right as well. So I think you've got to be patient on this one, and not in other words, just yet.
Yeah, and coal, 15% down year to date. And we're only in early March. We'll leave it there. Nkunza, Sanlam Private Wealth, always appreciate the early morning.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Stanlib Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Andrew Williams, Schroders Investment Director for Global Value Equities. Andrew, appreciate the time. I want to dig into value, but before we do, Trump's policy agenda impact on markets, perhaps particularly big tech. What's your take from what is truthfully a rapidly changing dynamic in many cases?
Well, Simon, thank you for having me, and that's a fantastic question. But I think if you look at what big tech's done over the past decade, you've seen the Mag 7 outperform the MSCI World in every single calendar year bar 2022. This year, things are looking a little bit different. You could arguably say that things started to roll over in September last year. Tesla's lost a huge amount of its market value. I think perhaps not so related to Trump, but related to what's coming out of China, and I think we may come onto this, is that we've had DeepSeek release their cutting-edge large language model on January 27th. That saw more than $500 billion wiped off NVIDIA's market cap, in a single day. I think that sort of put a crack, or perhaps even blown a hole in this narrative that Mag 7 have built around themselves, are so huge because their CapEx budgets are massive. DeepSeek's come along and proven that you can be cutting edge with less chips, less powerful, and certainly with a hell of a lot less CapEx. So I think there's more volatility, and I think that investors are having to rethink the trajectory that those stocks have potentially been on for the last decade.
Yeah, I take your point on that. And I mean, DeepSeek was absolutely an earthquake. Shifting to value, if we look at supply chains, and we can go all the way back to the tail end of the pandemic when logistics just crunched, and we've seen onshoring post that. We've obviously seen global trade and shifts in that. What does this mean for potential in value investors as we see that shift in global supply chains?
Well, I think for value investors, what you need to do is just buy these businesses with your eyes open. I think, as you rightly point out, if I think back to the tail end of COVID, we were looking at lots of all those businesses then. And actually, you see all the working capital of those companies blow out significantly, given the supply chain issues that they were having. I think this is another sort of fly in the ointment, if you like, a little bit more volatility, something else for the market to get worried about again. I think what's crucial is that you do all the work, you're bottom up, you really understand exactly what's going on with these businesses and their supply chains. And then you just bake in a decent margin of safety. And that's not only in the discount to the fair value of the business, but really understanding the balance sheet, really understanding the working capital dynamics and that kind of working capital cycle for these companies. And just making sure that relative to their peers, how strong are they? Should we see a greater shock than potentially the market's pricing in at the moment? Although, having said that, you've seen some decent price action already this year.
Yeah. You mentioned bottom up. My next question is going to be, are there any specific sectors that you're looking at, or is it purely value up and you're almost sector agnostic?
I'd say we are sector agnostic. The sectors, they are an output of that bottom up process. But what's really important is in portfolio construction, very conscious that we try to be as diversified as possible, mm-hmm. but within the cheapest quintile of the market. So that's really, really important. We never sacrifice valuation. But at the moment, there's almost an embarrassment of riches in the cheapest quintile. The cheapest quintile of MSCI World currently trades at a 30% discount to its long-term average. And you can create an active value portfolio that's cheaper still. So to put some numbers around that for you, the cheapest quintile's long-term average, 60p adjusted PE, is currently trading at around 10, but the portfolio trades on around 8. Now, at any given time, there are different sectors that are more overly or more better represented in that cheapest quintile. Sure. And it doesn't take a genius to work out what those are. They tend to be the sectors or the stocks or the countries around which there are negative headlines. So it won't surprise you that more recently, you know, the screen has been more populated with some Chinese businesses, or with some autos, but it's still, you know, in the back of 22, it was more consumer discretionary, but you're still able to buy, you know, very high quality businesses that have just, you know, derated for one reason or another, potentially some US fast moving goods companies, or even you know, the pharmaceutical businesses. So there really is, back for value investors today, there is really no excuse not to be quite well diversified and not have your portfolio beholden to one macroeconomic outcome.
Gotcha. A last question. I want to come back to China, and particularly in the face of the Trump tariffs. And of course, the Trump tariffs started in the first term. Biden continued and expanded, and now they've continued in Trump's second term. And I mean, the one thing that strikes me is you mentioned DeepSeek. DeepSeek is, in some ways, an outcome of the tariffs because they couldn't get NVIDIA chips, so they had to kind of code their way around the lack of processing power. Is Trump tariffs all bad for China?
I think the honest answer is I don't know, and I don't think anyone can know. But what I would say is, look, if we take this back to Trump's first term when he targeted China, if you look at what happened with the currencies at that point, I do think that China is Trump's primary target here. Mexico and Canada, I think, are more of a distraction. But the currency tends to do quite a lot of the work for you. So I think whatever tariffs are put on the headline number, the actual real impact to those Chinese businesses will be lower. I think the bigger risk probably for the US is the one that you quite rightly point out, which is that, you know, China has been, you know, I characterize China as this dark destroyer of profit margins for the developed market businesses. You know, this happened in the case of, you know, electric vehicles with BYD and what that's doing versus Tesla. It's happened in the case of solar panels. And I think DeepSeek just gives us that little look into what could happen versus NVIDIA, et cetera. So I think the bigger risk for developed market investors is really around the top-heavy nature of global benchmarks and that really being very US-focused and US-weighted at the moment. And while those are very, very high-quality businesses with fantastic earnings potential, their valuations are lofty. They're extremely lofty today, and history suggests it'll be tough for them to grow into those valuations.
We'll leave it there. That's Andrew Williams, Schroders Investment Director for Global Value Equities. Andrew, appreciate the time.
And that's our poll today on Twitter and LinkedIn. Tech stocks. We started chatting there with Andrew around tech stocks. Is President Trump going to be good for that sector? They've had a bit of a rough start to the year, but that after some spectacular years. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money smoother returns with Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting now with Dylan Govender, Head of Supply Chain at Investec Business Banking. Dylan, appreciate the early morning time. I want to start with President Trump's very aggressive and I suppose, scattered trade policy. Scattered in the sense that they seem to sometimes change day by day, hour by hour. The expectation is they're going to alienate the U.S. But is there a space where it could actually work in the U.S. and ultimately President Trump's favor?
Good morning, Simon, and thank you for having me on the show. Simon, good question. I mean, whether it works long-term, you know, it's a very complex issue. In terms of what's been imposed, you look at Trump's first term in terms of the trade wars that was imposed on China, it was a 25% hike in tariffs. Feb, he came up with another 10%, and then March, another 10%. So you're talking about 45% duties being imposed on products overall from China. You know, there's goods in the water. So ultimately, it's the consumer that's going to bear the brunt of that short term. Long term, whether it reaches its goal of local manufacturing and alternative sourcing of goods as opposed to China, You know, that's a very complex issue that we'll only see in time. But if we look at it historically in terms of Trump's first imposition on his first term when he brought in the 25% duties, you know, trade was reciprocal. You know, China imposed tariffs on goods coming from the U.S. And it was reported that the U.S. farmers lost about $27 billion in terms of export sales that year. That was when they conceded export share to Brazil.
Yeah.
So China changed its buying pattern as well, and it sourced from BRICS countries and alternative areas. And that actually did harm to the U.S. economy. And that's why I say it's a very complex issue in terms of how it may play out.
I take a point in that. And yeah, if suddenly you're not buying something from country A, then perhaps country B is the winner. I mean, is there a space where, and I'm thinking on local trade, where we could be, as a member of BRICS, a winner in some of the space? I mean, maybe agriculture, maybe some of the other areas. We've certainly got commodities, although I suspect we're already selling those to China.
100%, but I mean, their main sourcing is from the U.S. in terms of the trade that they have with them. But certainly, there could be potential for raw materials, for agricultural sector, in terms of BRICS and other trade agreements that we have. You know, but a lot of it is based on AGOA as well. AGOA is up for renewal in September, and that's a massive export trade because it allows us duty-free trade into the U.S., and the sectors that's affected there, you take your agricultural, you take your motor vehicle industry, for example, allows us the potential to manufacture products in South Africa, vehicles in South Africa, and export it to the U.S. market duty-free. If that's not renewed, that could have significant impact in terms of SA trade and exports.
And we could. I mean, in a perfect world, we can shift our exports, our AGOA exports, find new markets. The problem with that is it doesn't happen by September. That's a multi-year process. I mean, I've seen Minister Steenhuisen on the Twitters. I think it was grapes to one of the Asian countries. It had literally been 15 or 20 years of negotiation.
No, 100%. I mean, these things take time, you know, and then the U.S. doesn't seem to want to open their doors at the moment in terms of these discussions. But I think in terms of SA, we need to be much more deliberate around these engagements, these diplomatic engagements. And how do we diversify? You know, should the markets turn? How do we diversify our trade? And where do we seek alternative income? Because trade is one of the biggest factors in terms of turning our economy around. So we need to look at those solutions, and we need to start looking now.
Is there a sort of a path, an ideal path, and I'm thinking particularly for South Africa from here on out, or is it going to be volatile in part because it's global economics, and in part because President Trump changes his mind sometimes on a whim?
You know, Simon, I think it's very unforeseen. Hey, I mean, in terms of the volatility, a global supply chain is already an extremely volatile subject in itself. You know, you've got the Trump administration. You know, these impositions of these duties on trade wars is not something that's been rolled out to give economies time to adjust. It's just been slapped on immediately. So everything is very unforeseen at the moment. And then, like I say, it's only by those diplomatic engagements that we're going to try and see some headway here.
Yeah. So maybe it's the diplomats in the first port of call, and then we'll see how that goes. But anyway, we'll leave it there. Still in Govender, Head of Supply Chain, Investec Business Banking. Appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. On Friday, I was chatting around some ideas on what to buy for your tax-free savings account. I like global diverse in particular, and the more global and more diverse, better. There is a space, as I said, particularly for interest products such as REIT and bond ETFs. We asked if you know what you are buying. Around 40% each said yes, locked and loaded. Another 40% said, don't yet have a clue. The rest saying that you will find something. There is still plenty of time. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Impact results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. We'll be right back. On the Money.